Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, the glory of God and his kingdom. We're going to spend an hour today deep diving on, well, the main thing, as we call it, the principal threat to our country, foreign and domestic, that emanates from the Chinese Communist Party under the dictatorship of its current emperor, Xi Jinping. We're going to talk about it from the perspective of a man who brings extraordinary insight into not only the history, but the present moment, as well as over the horizon, assessments of where China has been, what it is up to at the moment, and where it is going under the Chinese Communist Party. His name is Colonel Grant Newsom, United States Marine Corps, retired. No stranger to this program, that's for sure. We're blessed to have him as a senior fellow at our Center for Security Policy and to tap into the expertise that he has accumulated over decades of service in the uniform of the United States Marines as a defense attaché in the capital of Japan, one of our most important allies in the Pacific. Japan's capital is, of course, Tokyo. He has also served as a foreign service officer, as well as a senior executive in business in the Western Pacific. He is, in short, a go-to guy, especially with the publication very recently of a terrific new book by him entitled When China Attacks, A Warning to America. Colonel Newsom, welcome aboard, sir. Always good to have you, especially today. Welcome.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
I'd want to start by talking about, as kind of a level setting for this hour-long conversation, and thank you for giving us so generously of your time, sir. Your book, When China Attacks. We've discussed it before, but I think it's always important to sort of be informed by your view that if China attacks is not so much the question as much as the matter of the timing of it. And I want to talk with you about both that and the likely targets of that attack. Give us your readout on why you think it's a matter of timing, not weather.
Sure. Well, what the Chinese are already doing is attacking us, and they have been for 30 plus years. And that's one of the things my book gets out. They've been attacking us on the economic front. They have gotten us to move a huge chunk of our manufacturing to China. They have gotten American businessmen, America's financial class, hooked on the idea they have to be on and in China. And they have also got America dependent on things like Chinese manufacturing of things like pharmaceuticals. And you know, some of the raw materials we need for our military as well, and a number of other things. So they've got us economically and psychologically hooked. Also, they've been attacking us biologically. That's what COVID was. Chemical attacks, drug war, as they call it. You have fentanyl that killed 70,000 Americans last year and will kill more this year. It comes from China. They could stop it if they want. They don't want to. They're doing financial warfare against us. They're attacking us on that front, trying to displace the dollar. We're helping them, of course, by spending like drunken sailors or worse and debasing the currency. But they want to see the dollar taken down a few notches, quite a few notches if they can. Psychological warfare and proxy warfare, which is getting America's elite classes, America's most influential people to either be on the Chinese payroll or to think they have to defend China's interests rather than America's interests. So China's been very successful in that regard. And so they already have started a war. But what I think you're talking about is the so-called kinetic war, the shooting war. And to Americans, that's when a war begins. We don't recognize anything before that as actually being warfare, but we should. But nonetheless,
let me ask you to pause on that point, sir, sure. Because I think this is so critical. And what you've essentially just read us in on is what the Chinese themselves have called unrestricted warfare. But it was all based upon the point back in 1999, when this book was published by two Chinese People's Liberation Army colonels, that they weren't strong enough militarily to take us on. But what you've described and what they described really was, how can they take us on in a way that most Americans would not even notice was warfare, unrestricted warfare at that. And you know, one of the things I just will shamelessly plug, in addition to your wonderful book, which I don't have in studio, I'm sorry to say, which is, of course, When China Attacks, my own, to which you have massively contributed, sir, as one of the regular featured guests in our webinar sponsored by our Committee on the Present Danger China, of which you are a member. It's entitled The Indictment, and it talks about both the things that you've just been pointing out to us, but also the extent of the damage that has been done in this era of unchecked, unnoticed, unresponded to, unrestricted warfare. And I just want to make this point, because I will come now to the kinetic part of this, where things could go very, very wrong very, very rapidly. But just make note of this. Our indictment is based on those webinars and the inevitable conclusion that what we're dealing with is really a transnational criminal organization, the Chinese Communist Party. And it has been engaged by its own terms in warfare that constitutes war crimes against America. I'll just ask you to sort of tease that out a little bit. You're very familiar first on the military side of the equation, but also in the business side, with the cumulative effects of the economic warfare. And Colonel, I'm fond of saying there's a certain acquiescence to the fact that we have a rust belt in America, as though it was kind of an inevitable thing. Is it not the case, in fact, that the rust belt, and what that term tries to capture in terms of the kind of condition of our industrial base and much of our productive capacity in this country more generally, is a function of having been taken down by the Chinese Communist Party, sir?
Yes. And you really can't blame them. I mean, if the Chinese are dealing with stupid people, well, why shouldn't they take advantage of that? And they, as I said, they got too much of America's business class to think that they could make a ton of money in China, that they could make a ton of money by not having to deal with labor unions, environmental laws, and could sell one of something to every person in China. And they got them to believe that. And
so that's 1.4 billion toothbrushes is just a tractor beam for both business dealings and investors as well, right?
Well, that's the idea. And Wall Street, of course, encouraged them to do this. And the political class, unfortunately, went along with this. It started a long time ago, you know, at least 30 plus years ago, but really letting China into the World Trade Organization, despite meeting none of the rules, really supercharged this effort. So it was a...
And despite the prospect that they wouldn't abide by any of the rules once they were in it, which has proven to be the case.
So, right? But what this has done, the effect has been, is that it has allowed China to build up its economy into a very powerful force, a global force, one that threatens us. And we have effectively provided them the financing, provided them the direct investment. They set up factories in China, handed over technology. We have allowed them to steal what we didn't hand over, and we have they've really suffered nothing from that. So we've actually
Colonel,
built
can
up
can I just ask, hold this thought, because we're going to have to take a very short break here in a moment, but I wanted just to introduce the idea. When you talk about all of this, I think for many people, they probably are thinking, well, it can't be that bad. And yet, you were an executive, as I recall, rather senior executive, in the Far East for a company called Motorola. And when we come back after this short break, sir, I'd like you to talk a little bit about your firsthand experience, your eyewitness to that kind of mentality, that mindset, and what it translated into in terms of, well, the decimation of a great American industrial enterprise, Motorola. We'll be talking about that and much more with Colonel Grant Newsom, United States Marine Corps, the author of When China Attacks, right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Since communism's inception, one world government has been a weapon in its adherence playbook for taking down America and the free world and establishing their absolute control. From Karl Marx's day to this, enemies of freedom have never been closer to achieving that audacious and terrifying goal. A secret to getting so near to the outcome that has, to date, eluded successive tyrants is that the Chinese Communist Party and its vassals, proxies, and puppets are not using force yet. Rather, they are pursuing so-called global governance via purportedly international organizations that, in fact, work for Beijing. For example, we see the CCP-controlled World Health Organization and the United Nations seeking the power to dictate to us, respectively, public health emergencies and complex global shocks, and what we must do in response. If enslavement doesn't suit you, join us at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Affney. We're back, and we're visiting with Colonel Grant Newsom, United States Marine Corps retired, a man who not only has a very distinguished record in the United States military, but also has been extraordinarily important in his contributions in various other facets of his life as a Foreign Service officer, as an author, as a business leader. And we promised to talk a little bit about your experiences as an executive in Motorola. Colonel, give us a sense of the sort of firsthand case study of what you just described as the unrestricted warfare against our economy that you personally experienced there.
Sure. Well, Motorola, if most people probably remember it, it used to be one of America's best companies. It was a huge company, very successful. In fact, it was, you said the name Motorola, what you thought of was really American manufacturing and technological prowess. And it was also run by some very decent people, the Galvin family. But somehow, in the 80s, they got the idea they had to be in China. And as a result, after the Tiananmen Square massacre, which was when the Chinese government killed some thousands of its own citizens protesting for slightly more honest government, actually Motorola went into China as effectively what's called the anchor tenant. They were the big American company that was going to come in and set things up, make things right with America and China, as George Bush wanted to do. So they had U.S. government.
Hold that thought. That's a key point. Yeah. You said they, for some reason, decided that they had to be in China. Talk about the Bush impetus, the U.S. government impetus, both really under Republicans and Democrats, to get into China in a big way and to help them. What was the thinking that was going on there? Was this already evidence of elite capture at work, or was it the prospect of that fabulous wealth that would accompany it that did the trick?
I think they had psychological capture on George Bush's part. That was the first President Bush. He had been the ambassador to China, the first one. So he had lived there for something like all of 15 months. And for some reason, you know, he thought that China was, they were just a good boy that wanted to get out of this sort of delinquent's skin. And after the Chinese shot up thousands of their citizens, there's a letter he wrote to Deng Xiaoping, the Chinese dictator, and it's on the internet, and it is absolutely, it's nauseating. It's basically saying, well, we know
again,
you didn't.
Set the stage for this. Okay. This is the Tiananmen Square massacre you're talking about, that Deng Xiaoping, the then General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, brought about. And who delivered the letter for him, and what were the timing and circumstances of that delivery?
Oh, my goodness. He either sent Brent Scowcroft, his National Security Advisor.
Correct.
That's my recollection.
That's
and
correct.
But he sent it to deliver it, but you have to read it. I mean, I'd really advise people to read this letter. It's saying, yeah, this wasn't so nice, but I know you didn't really mean it. We got to get our relationship back on track. So part of this was getting a company like Motorola to go to China. And Motorola did everything you were supposed to do. They set up factories. They hired lots of Chinese people. They handed over technology. And did everything the Chinese Communist Party told them to do. And as a result, they built up their competition and within 5 years at least, you had Chinese companies that were making products that were just about as good as Motorola's, and they were a lot cheaper, and they were exactly like Motorola's. And it wasn't just cell phones. This really, I think, gave a huge impetus to China's technology industry, and they handed it over, and they were pretty much defenseless when they got in there.
Is it correct, Colonel, that Motorola was one of the companies that actually had a replica of its own production facility built in China, so that it was essentially identical and was a turnkey operation? Am I misremembering the company, or is this just an example of what went on elsewhere?
Well, as far as I know, and what you did know is that, but what you've described has happened. But with Motorola, it was the Chinese are smart as we are. Didn't take much for them to figure out how to set up a factory that makes this stuff, and a lot of it. And as I said, Motorola did not protect themselves from this at all. Well, first, they should not have gotten into China. But their efforts to really protect their technology were inadequate, unfortunately, just in every respect. There were some token
and all too common made. American businesses. No.
And Motorola's case study is just typical. There's thousands of these. And so basically the short answer today is Motorola, after a long, nasty sort of bout of suffering, they are a shell of what they used to be. They barely even exist. And most of the main part of Motorola is now owned by a Chinese company, Lenovo. And that's how bad it is. But this destroyed a huge, just a very good American company on which many, almost generations of people had depended. They had worked for them for several generations. And there's also suppliers who work for Motorola, all their family members, et cetera. And it absolutely took a body blow.
Colonel, one of the things that we've done with the Committee on the Present Danger of China was try to find out what the human cost to Americans was. And you sort of touched on it in that comment. We did a fascinating program. Steve Bannon was a member of it. Brian Kennedy, Representative Chris Stewart joined us in Chicago. And we talked to what turned out to be a group of Indian Americans who had been deeply involved in the electronics business, which I guess you could say Motorola was a part in a sense, certainly used their stuff. And they described how the Chinese had just essentially taken them down, literally, physically taken down the entire industrial sector, with a few exceptions, I guess. And it was an unbelievable story about, people losing their jobs, people losing their companies, people losing their technology. And yet, as you say, this isn't just, an isolated case here and there. It was like the locusts came in and just ate everything in our economy. Is that too much of an exaggeration?
Well, no. And if you don't think so, I would suggest going to any part of an American city of any size and go through the parts of it where what working class people used to live, people who worked in the manufacturing industries used to live. And it's not just the high tech or the electronics, but everything. It could be textiles, furniture. Go to those towns, and you can almost see the evidence in the architecture, which used to be decent homes, now look like absolute slums. Look at the people around. Where'd they go? And the ones who've stayed, what's happened to them? No hope, dead-end jobs at best, opens them up for drug abuse, which the Chinese have been very glad to provide, as I've said. And it's one thing leads to another. And the cumulative effect of this is it weakens the United States. It weakens the main enemy, as the Chinese refer to us as. So when the time does come for shooting, if it's even necessary, well, we're not going to be able to respond very well. And it really does just tears the heart out of a society. It's the physical cost, the human cost, the psychological cost. And so if you don't believe me, just go take a look. And none of this had to happen. One of the just maddening things is that you think that, well, it was just immensely profitable for these companies that went to China or let the Chinese buy them out, that they must have made a ton of money. Well, no, most of them did not. and look at it over the long term, over an extended period, and most of them did not make much. And even the ones that did make some, it wasn't huge amount. The difference between making it in America or making it in China is not all that much. And that isn't, that's just the financial part. It doesn't even take into account the human cost. And at that point, it was not a good deal at all.
Colonel, we're coming back to this in a moment after a very short break. I just want to say, I think it's accurate to contend that some people made a lot of money, but not necessarily the corporations themselves, or let alone their workforces and others. We'll be right back with Colonel Grant Newsom on the other side of this short break. Stay tuned. Much more to come right after this.
In cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. We are visiting for this full hour with one of our favorite guests, an unbelievably capable individual, knowledgeable, highly respected, and, well, trusted for his insights into the enemy we face, the mortal enemy, the existential threat to freedom of our time, the Chinese Communist Party. His name is Colonel Grant Newsom. He is a retired Marine colonel, as well as a man who has had experience in a lot of other relevant walks of life, including as a foreign service officer, a defense attaché in Tokyo, as well as a business executive based there in the Western Pacific. And Colonel, you were very, I think, clearly describing the war crime that we talk about in our indictment, for which we believe the Chinese Communist Party must be prosecuted, at least in the court of public opinion, as they say, for the dislocation, for the impoverishment, for the demoralization, for the destruction of our society that you've just, you know, described. And yet it seems even today, as they are building inexorably a military capability they did not have in 1999, when Unrestricted Warfare was published, for an option that they seem increasingly intent on exercising. Before I ask you to explore with us the evidence that that a shooting war is now decidedly in prospect, let me just ask you to drill down a little bit more on this elite capture phenomenon, as the Chinese call it. There's an entire institution within the Chinese Communist Party called the United Front Work Department. Talk a little bit about it, the role that it plays, and the successes that one has to give it credit for having accomplished in this area of capturing our elites.
Well, it is an organization or a combination of organizations all run by the Chinese Communist Party, and its goal is to win over foreigners by whatever method it takes, and to go after people who basically challenge China, who want to stand up to China. And it doesn't have to shoot them. In most cases, it will if it has to. But it simply has to pay them. And that works very well. And, or persuade them with like a couple of first class business tickets to business class tickets to China, five-star hotel, participate in a seminar. That works very well with America's academic class. It's financial class.
And the media as well, right?
Media as well. You know, there have been some over the years, very good reporters who've covered China. But most of them, they've pulled their punches. Some of them willingly, others, well, their bosses tell them they have to, because it'll hurt Chinese the advertisement, the money they get from China. But they have gotten Wall Street just hooked on this, and by giving favored treatment or just doling it out just enough to keep Wall Street interested, which doesn't take much because Wall Street's playing with somebody else's money. And
that's the point that I left with before the break, Colonel, and I just develop this a little further. There is this idea, you've described it very well, that, you know, everybody's going to get rich if we go into China in a big way. We'll sell everything to these 1.4 billion people and so on. But in point of fact, and the financial sector is a prime example of this, as best I can tell. As you say, they're not only investing other people's money to their own extreme personal profit, but they're not necessarily making a lot of money for those whose money, friends, pension funds, mutual fund investors, mm-hmm. Index funds and so on. Is that right? That this is very cheap for the Chinese because they're getting access to, by some estimates, $3 to $6 trillion in this fashion. And they're really only paying a premium to the guys who engineer the deals. Is that fair?
Well, it is, and it's just astonishing. Not, you could see if it happened for like a few months, but not for decades.
Decades.
And that's pretty much it. But keep in mind, from Wall Street, the financial class's perspective, they get a cut of the deal. So it's if money's moving, they get a cut of it. When it goes into China, when it comes out of China, they get a cut of it. And long-term success, profits, well, that's not quite as important. The fees you get from listing Chinese companies on U.S. exchanges, even though the Chinese companies don't meet the requirements, well, that's more money in your pocket. And
Though some of those companies work for the People's Liberation Army directly.
Oh, no. There's a bunch of them. And so we're effectively funding the growth of the Chinese military. There is no nice way to put it. But Wall Street, as you know, they donate to politicians. Our business class donates to politicians. This is the donor class. And there's plenty of politicians who know what the damage has been, but they've gone along because the donors tell them to. And it is about that simple. There's a lot of politicians who are angry about this, but you can see there haven't been enough of them over the years.
And they're surrounded by a good body of those. Our colleague and friend Trevor Loudon has talked about, I think, 33 members of the United States Senate he considers to be security risk senators. And he's got a 6-volume book coming out called House Un-Americans, which talks about 125 members of the House. So those few that do get it and are worried about this are struggling with very large numbers of captured members of our Congress, for example. No?
Yeah, Trevor Loudon does his homework. And it is, unfortunately, it is about this bad. So how we deal with it and what do we do about it, that's always the harder thing. But it is, this is not hyperbole. What we're saying, the Chinese have been immensely successful. It's not a coincidence that they have gotten this kind of influence in the United States.
And Trevor makes the point, as I'm sure you know, that this is dirt cheap. as you say, as opposed to actually having to fight a bloody and costly war for a few billion here, a few billion there, they've essentially weakened us at the very least, if not to reduce us to supplicants.
Yeah, I would also note, I've for 20 years, I've been reading Wall Street's analysis of the China market. And I read it just to see if there's any mention ever that investing in a country that doesn't have a legal system, that's valid objective is to put you out of business and replace you with a Chinese company, where property rights don't exist, where everything you have is going to be stolen. If that's maybe not a good thing, that maybe that poses some risk. And I have almost never seen that mentioned over 20 years.
It is staggering.
And you know, the number of times could fit amongst the fingers of one hand.
Yeah. And Colonel, you know, you touched on this a moment ago, but I want to just elaborate on it. In 2013, May, to be precise, of 2013, Vice President Joe Biden helped engineer a deal that allowed these Chinese companies access to our capital markets without having to conform to our laws or our regulations, for that matter, designed to protect investors. And so I think it's fair to say that probably most of them, in these pension funds particularly and the like, mutual funds, have no idea their money's in China. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's properly correct? Probably correct. And what are the implications of that if, in fact, God forbid, we do find ourselves in a shooting war? Do you think they're going to get their money back?
No. That's an easy one. I like easy questions. But no, they won't. You're as likely to get it back if you, I don't know, go into a casino and put everything on red seven and let it spin. That's about how likely you are. You're not going to get it back. That's a problem now, is to say you are some big company and you're in China all in. What do you do? How do you disentangle yourselves from this? One, the Chinese government will make it very hard for you, but also who's going to be the CEO who says, man, we really screwed up. You know, we took all your money and put it, you know, on red seven and it didn't come up. What do you say?
Easier to get more of your money going in the hopes that maybe Red 7 will turn out to be a better bet, right?
Keep it going. Keep it. Get someone else's money to put in. Keep pouring it in hopes you can get out of it. You can get out of it, say, with a nice bonus, and then it'll be someone else's problem. It's musical chairs, if there ever was, or a Ponzi scheme.
Ponzi scheme is exactly the word I was thinking.
It's a giant Ponzi scheme, and that is what the China market is.
Yeah. And look, as you know so well, because of your background in national security, it would be one thing if this were just ill-advised business dealings or even, you know, malfeasant dealings, screwing your clients for your own profit. But this does have national security implications, and we got another break coming up here in a minute, but just to tee this up. One of the things that we've been working on, as you know, from the inception of the Committee on the Present Danger of China, of which, again, you've been a founding member, is this idea that the United States government's employees, past and present, including now your comrades in arms, past and present, veterans as well as serving personnel, should not be investing their pension funds in communist China, including, as we discussed, sir, in some cases, in companies that are building the weapons with which to kill them. And yet, as part of this, this scheme, the BlackRocks and other financial guys on the one hand, and their the recipients of their donations, political donations on the other. This is now the way it's rigged, this so-called thrift savings plan. If you want to invest in an international portfolio for your thrift savings plan government pension, you have to invest in Chinese companies. I want to talk to you, sir, about whether that is not only advisable, but whether it's morally defensible. We'll be right back with Colonel Grant Newsom, United States Marine Corps, to discuss that and more right after this. We'll be right back.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Since communism's inception, one world government has been a weapon in its adherence playbook for taking down America and the free world and establishing their absolute control. From Karl Marx's day to this, enemies of freedom have never been closer to achieving that audacious and terrifying goal. A secret to getting so near to the outcome that has, to date, eluded successive tyrants is that the Chinese Communist Party and its vassals, proxies, and puppets are not using force yet. Rather, they are pursuing so-called global governance via purportedly international organizations that, in fact, work for Beijing. For example, we see the CCP-controlled World Health Organization and the United Nations seeking the power to dictate to us, respectively, public health emergencies and complex global shocks, and what we must do in response. If enslavement doesn't suit you, join us at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We are speaking for this full hour with a fascinating individual, a man of great experience and expertise, insight, and just plain common sense. His name is Colonel Grant Newsom, United States Marine Corps retired, the author of a terrific book, which I believe he can now hold up and show to our audience, When China Attacks, A Warning to America. Colonel, we're going to talk about that prospect of attack now, having set the stage for what kind of war they've been waging against us right along and why you think this might be the time when it goes kinetic.
Okay.
Show us the book.
Sure. As I say in this book.
There you go.
It's an excellent book. It's highly recommended.
But it is
written actually for just people who want to understand what's the deal with China. So I lay out what happens, what will happen if we lose. What they've done to us, and what we do about it. But what you've seen in play is really a very systematic effort by the Chinese to weaken us. But at the same time, the real gravy is they have gotten us to fund their economic buildup and their military buildup, which are the same thing. So back to your say American veterans, retired civil servants, putting their money into the China market. Well, this money, these dollars that are convertible currency that you can use to buy things overseas, which China depends on, well, they use it to buy Australian iron ore to make the steel to build Chinese Navy ships. They use it to buy technology companies that they use to build the weaponry that's going to hit and sink American ships, shoot down American aircraft, and kill a lot of Americans in the process. So we funded it. I mean, how much better does it get from China's perspective? And what they have done is they have built up a military now that it has caught up with us in many areas. It has surpassed us in some. And if they choose their timing right, they can beat us. If it's a fight close to the Chinese mainland, we would have a very, very hard time. It's a fight over Taiwan. Same thing. We'd have a very hard time. 20 years ago, some of us warned what was coming, but we were laughed at best, and people laughed about the idea the Chinese could ever threaten us militarily. Well, they can. And they say if they're careful, pick their spots, we're going to have some serious trouble from them. We still have some advantages, but this is much, much too close a game than it ought to be. And we've done it to ourselves.
Yeah. Let me ask you about the advantages, Colonel, because some of them seem to be things that we kind of take for granted are permanent advantages. We've had this unbelievably impressive military, as you know better than most. It has fought far removed from our shores, quite impressively, projecting power both at sea, in the air, and on land. And there's a certain sense, I think, on the part of a lot of Americans, probably not so much those actually involved with the United States military these days, but the rest of us, that it's a permanent condition that we will be the world's only superpower and everybody will be less powerful than us and we will therefore be able to deter them without having to fight. That's an advantage at some level, but it's also a trap. Mm-hmm. If it turns out those assumptions are not correct, and what you've just described very briefly and get into in a lot more detail in your book is that's not a permanent state of affairs by any means, and especially when you're dealing with an adversary we're funding, determined to change the circumstances, no?
That's right. You know, I like to think of it in sports terms. You know, remember, say, when the Dallas Cowboys were really good, you know, nobody could touch them. And you thought, well, they're always going to be really good. And then the 49ers come along. You know, another team comes along and somehow it's like really good. And it takes them a little while and they gradually get good enough to beat the other team. And then they overtake them. And the Cowboys haven't won a playoff game in 20 years. But that is one way to look at it. That's what happened. We thought they could never catch up with us. And if we handed over technology, well, so what? They'll never figure out how to use it. They're just Chinese. How wrong can you be? But an example I give, and it's a good one, is around 2009, the commander of the PACOM, the Indo-PACOM, all the forces in the Pacific, Admiral Keating, he went to China on a visit. He was asked, well, what do you think about China getting aircraft carriers? He says, well, I don't see anything wrong with it, and I'd be glad to help them as much as I can. And that was the thinking. They'll never be able to catch up with us. They'll take them decades to do it. Well, they now have aircraft carriers, and they're figuring out how to use them really fast. But also think of it as another way to look at it in terms of how things have changed. Is one of our advantages was that we could always hit people from so far away that they couldn't reach us. Well, now China has a rocket force that actually can get just about anywhere. It can reach way out. It can go easily, say Guam, Hawaii.
Some of it hypersonically, no less.
That's right. And the technology of it, some of it, the hypersonics, they come in so fast in such directions that we can't stop them. And they're in a naval fight, their anti-ship missiles outrange ours by about 50 miles. So, but we can't even get a shot in. So we're,
analogy, if you're a boxer with longer arms than the other guy, it's not pretty for the other guy.
Well, that's it. So you can see one of the disadvantages we're now under.
Yeah. Let me just ask you about this, because you've used that quote from Admiral Keating on the program before, I think, and it's really haunting. It's not just that we thought they couldn't catch up, I think. That comment seems to suggest that we don't have anything to fear from them, mm-hmm. if they actually have a formidable military, maybe even comparable to our own, let alone surpassing it. And I know you and one of your other counterparts who courageously said 20 odd years ago, this is not going to end well, Captain James Fennell, put your careers really on the line by telling the truth. And you were, I know in his case, and I suspect in yours, it was not something that rewarded you, for example, with general officer status, for one thing. But when we come back, Colonel, I just want to ask you about the cumulative effect of the willful blindness we've indulged in, mm-hmm. and where this leaves us now, when, not if, China attacks. We'll be right back with the author of the book of that name, When China Attacks, Colonel Grant Newsom, United States Marines, retired. Stay tuned. We're back for the final installment of this extraordinarily informative, if deeply troubling, conversation with Colonel Grant Newsom, member, I'm proud to say, of our Center for Security Policy team as a senior fellow, a fellow with tremendous expertise, born of a lot of experience, some of it a little hard, I think it's fair to say, but also a man with the courage to tell the truth, which he does in his new book, which I hope he'll hold up again at least once more before we part.
Okay.
And that is When China Attacks, available in all the right places. Colonel, to wrap this up, you've painted a picture of a Chinese Communist Party that is determined to become the world's next, not just superpower, but hegemon. It has been doggedly pursuing the takedown of the only real impediment to that goal, namely the United States of America, for decades, first with unrestricted warfare, and you've described the various forms that that's taken and your own personal experience watching it play out. You've also warned that with our financing, no less, they have now put themselves very close to the position where they can, in fact, exercise a military option they didn't have back in 1999 when they talked about unrestricted warfare. So the question to you, sir, is there anything we can do about this now? If so, what is it? And are we doing it?
Well, we're not doing it yet. But one of the fortunate things is that one of the things we have to do is just stop doing what we're doing. And that's usually pretty easy. You know, if we're funding China, if we're handing over technology to them, if we're investing in the country that really keeps this, you know, this very, very shaky Chinese Communist Party in control, well, stop doing it. That isn't all that hard to figure out. But if we're going to continue to fund the People's Republic of China, if we're going to just allow their just economic rampage to continue on the grounds that, well, it would hurt us too much, that it removes any sort of influence we have over them, well, then we should expect to lose. It is about that stark. You can't account on the military that really isn't in the position it needs to be. You can't count on them to save your bacon. And when I say the military, I'm talking about the deplorables, the people from flyover country who are supposed to die to save the bacon of the Wall Street class, the CEO class.
But and who have not benefited nearly as much, at least, if not
at all.
Very, very seriously.
Not at all. So you've got to, but you have to recognize China is an enemy. You have to admit that. Just listen to what they say. Read the Chinese press for a week. Just read the English translations. And it absolutely drips venom and threatenings and slaughter against us. And they're not just jabbering.
And that's the English language version. I think it's fair to say that the Chinese is even more direct.
Pretty bad. But so the point is here, stop funding them. Stop building them, stop strengthening them. Give them a choice so they can either decide whether they're going to have flush toilets for 500 million people or a military that can kill us all.
Colonel, let me ask you about one aspect of this that I know you don't mean to suggest that it's easy to stop doing what you're doing when you're hooked on the money or hooked on, you know, the quarterly profits or whatever. But specifically, sir, one of the things that is devastating is our dependency on China for supply chains of everything from medicine to flat screens to chips to you name it. What is the chance that if we don't wean ourselves from those supply chains, they will be weaponized very decisively against us, resulting in that outcome you just mentioned?
Well, the chances of that are about 100%. During the COVID thing, one Chinese commentator or official said, well, if the Americans aren't nice, we're going to let them drown in a sea of COVID. We're going to hold off, you know, stop sending them medicines or the stuff you need to make medicines. So the chances we're going to see that used against us are 100%, one way or the other. So what you do is you stop, you make it so that it is not financially or reputationally beneficial to get into the China market. Congress is going to have to stand up and pass some laws in this regard. But also, I'd like to see state attorney generals suing CEOs of major corporations for malfeasance, mishandling shareholder money, looking after shareholder interests by getting into a market without a legal system that is out to kill you. Why they don't bring those suits, I don't know. Individual shareholders, activist shareholders should bring these suits like 10 times a day. That is one way that you can change the business class thinking. And that does depend on money and the fear of, I don't know how much humiliation affects them, but maybe the fear of breaking a law and going to prison, that generally wakes people up.
I am completely with you on this. And in fact, this is the central point of this book, which complements yours very nicely, I think, sir. And that is, if we're dealing with a transnational criminal operation, and it is engaged in war crimes against our country, which I think you've documented very nicely, then the people who are aiding and abetting that activity are accomplices to criminal activity. And it goes right to the point that you were making earlier about risk. Are the risk managers in those corporations going to say, wait a minute, this is putting us in jeopardy? Are companies going to be sued by attorneys general or even under racketeering laws? I understand individuals may have cause of action to bring, you know, cases against these kinds of people, at least in civil court, if not criminal court. This is a vital part of the arsenal that we need to be bringing to bear against those who seek to take us down and are doing so rather successfully at this point. Last 30 seconds, closing comments, sir.
Well, the game's not over. You know, sometimes when you discuss these things, it's like one tale of misery outdoes the next. But we still have some huge advantages. And one of them is that we are the United States. And you know, our system is better than theirs. That's why everyone in China would like to have a green card to live here. But as I said, if you got a problem, sometimes it's, and you want to fix it, as I said, it's a lot easier just to stop doing this. You know,
the law of holes, behavior. They call it. Stop digging if you're in one.
Yeah, and our military can still fight pretty well, but it needs to get its act together more than it is. And China's still got they got a ways to go before they can take us on globally. So
let's,
we have some time.
End on that hopeful note, and that we will heed your warnings. Thank you, Colonel Grant Newsom, United States Marine Corps retired author of When China Attacks. Come back to us, sir, with more very soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.